Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, it's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward. Together, that's exactly where we're going to go. God bless
you. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin Eye's look at this week. Very busy week in Wisconsin's capital. As usual, WISEye was there. Listen to this. Representative Hintz challenges Senator Darling. How can you vote for this transportation budget? Representative Cuenca comes back. Representative Hintz, when's the last time you did a transportation budget? Debate on major regulation, deregulation of mining, repeal of the mining. We were in Ladysmith. Testimony on a bill that would fight prostitution. And, let's go to WISEye was there.
I mean, the question again was, how are we going to come up with a long-term funding solution? And I don't know, how did anybody in the Senate, Chairman Darling, the mega projects, how's your name on this motion? I mean, you got railroaded. You lost that two-month battle this summer, I'll tell you that. So I give you all an F, and we should try again.
Representative Hintz, you've been longer here than I have. Have you ever put a transportation package forward? You have not. You have not in your long career here. You have not tonight. There are reforms in this package that, over the course of the next decade, will save us hundreds of millions of dollars. But we also need to realize that our transportation needs are going to cost us billions of dollars.
And that's why Mining for America, this bill is so important, because we have one of the richest mineral endowments that you will find in the world right here on Highway 8 from Ladysmith over to the Upper Peninsula of Michigan.
This legislation will create a toxic wasteland in northern Wisconsin that will destroy all those sustainable industries that depend upon access to clean water.
Misty was a young woman, just 18 years old, and she was at the library using the computer to look for a job. And a man named William was hanging out there, and he was 28 years old, and spending time with her that day and complimenting her, and by the end of the day, she considered him a boyfriend. He told her about other ways that she could make money. And once she started doing that, there was no shortage of men that were willing to exploit her.
I guess I'm wondering, how many of these mandates have we put on our schools recently?
I mean, all of these are very well-intentioned and things that you could make a really good argument that our children, you know, need to have high-quality education in.
So this whole thing about we interfere with the dictating of what the legislature makes our circuit court judges say. And if we take the issue of naturalization off the table because it didn't comply to it, or it didn't apply to it, what do we have left?
Houston, I mean, JR, we have a budget.
Yes.
We finally have a budget.
Yes.
Let's just go through some of the high points.
Okay.
The Republicans say they praise the tax cuts. We did $639 million more for K-12. Democrats say those tax cuts favor the rich. And, oh, yeah, some of these tax cut programs, which we'll get into later, put a lien on the next two-year budget. And it's a four-straight budget with no comprehensive long-term highway funding. Your thoughts overall?
Governor Walker got the three things he wanted most in this budget. He wanted the education funding. He got no gas tax increase. And he got a property tax bill in 2018 lower than it was in 2014.
He also got a tuition freeze again. Excuse me?
But those three things are all he really, truly cared about in this budget, and he got them. Now, he also gets to tout the repeal of the AMT and the end of the state's property tax, the forestry tax. So you'll hear about those things as well. But for him, this is exactly what he wants to go out and campaign on now, about your property tax bill, how he's held the line on taxes, and how you're not seeing gas tax increase. So for him, that part is a great thing. The two-month delay, though, underscores the image of Scott Walker as not being a negotiator with the legislature, somebody who isn't good at arm-twisting. He used the bully pulpit, but in a weird way. He goes out now. He went to 50 schools and campaigned for the K-12 money, so he got that. He talked about, I will veto the gas tax increase. But did you ever see a point where Scott Walker forced those guys back to the table or forced this thing to get done?
I agree with you.
It's an odd thing for a guy who spent 9 years in the assembly to not be a negotiator or not have a golden touch with the legislative branch.
But in those 9 years in the assembly, he was a committee chair, but he never rose to a majority leader or speaker. Mm-hmm. But there's one other overall aspect of this budget. The last question asked of Fiscal Bureau Director Lang, what is the surplus? And Lang said $186 million, which is about $170 more than the governor's budget recommended in February 8. Here's my question. Is that a hedge against recession?
Absolutely. That's why things that Governor Walker proposed that weren't done included his income tax cuts, about $204 million roughly.
Yeah.
Those were not done in part to hoard cash for what could be a downturn. Look at it. We've been, in a growth period for about 8-9 years now? We're kind of at the end of the usual cycle of growth. At some point, a recession will hit.
Yes.
We've also taken so much of our general purpose revenue and used it to offset property tax bills that we put a greater stress on that fund from income, sales, corporate, and excise taxes. When that recession hits, and it's a when, not an if, when it hits, we are going to have an issue of figuring out how to balance all these things and pay for these
that
demands.
That omnibus motion moved $48 million from the general fund to pay lottery winners.
That was all that lottery credit was done was to take care of that property tax bill. That's one of the last pieces they did to make sure that that property tax bill hits the 2014 mark, because that is one of Walker's bottom lines.
That's right. Okay, and before we get into tax cuts and the Foxconn deal, very interesting closing remarks. We're going to show you four of them. Representative Shanklin, this is a bad budget. Senator Lena Taylor, this is a bad budget, but because it's a Republican budget, we're closing with Representative John Nygren saying why it's good and Senator Alberta Darling saying why it's good. Let's listen to about 3 minutes of closing debate on a $76 million 2017-2019 budget.
And all that money, that $500 million that I just outlined in three different tax repeals that you guys are doing, is competing with Foxconn, which will get first priority. It's competing with our public schools. It's competing with other things you're putting us on the hook for, like that GPR payment for special needs vouchers, for example. It's competing with roads, which you weren't able to solve at all last night, which you spent two full months arguing about behind closed doors. And I haven't seen a single solution that, you know, will actually put us on the right track. So I just want to point that out. I don't think that this is fiscally responsible to rely on all of these GPR backfills that we'll be competing with our UW system, our public schools, our roads, our healthcare, and Foxconn, which we will be on the hook for. And I just want my colleagues to recognize that, because it might be a cute talking point, but at the end of the day, it doesn't actually help the people we're supposed to serve.
You know, you're saying to people that you're creating a savings for them in taxes, but people are then having to locally pay for sewage maintenance and additional waste fees and garbage pickup and stadium taxes and so many different pieces that they're paying for, and they're being fed locally, and you're trying to hold your hands up saying that, you know, we saved you. No, what you did was shift the burden. And I need not speak anymore about the way that you have done Milwaukee. The way that you've done Milwaukee on multiple issues. I should have made a running list from day one to now that I could name off all of the things that you've done that in turn create a overall crippling effect for the state's only first-class city. Shame is the only thing I can think of.
But as far as the nuts and bolts of the budget, from the beginning, we made an effort to try and continue to move Wisconsin forward in a direction that, granted, we as conservatives believe is the right direction. You as Democrats may not. All these reforms that we've talked about over the last several years have brought us an opportunity to have a vote that we took just a few days ago, yesterday. Boy, time is dragging by when you think that vote was a few days ago. But on Foxconn, something that you criticized, that people are leaving the state, 15,000 workers a year were leaving the state, yet the single largest opportunity for our state in a generation, if not longer, and you vote no.
And I think this budget puts a lot of reform into moving Wisconsin forward, because it invests in education tremendously. It helps the developmentally disabled. It works to help our most needy people get an education and have the American dream. It works to get rid of a lot of burdensome taxes, and works to make home ownership more possible by having property taxes contained. But I think it's because of that experience with so many of the immigrants who believed in our country and believed in our quality of life that I'm so much for this kind of a budget that does not rely on government but tries to have a climate for opportunity, for the development of small businesses, for people to know that if they work hard, they will be able to succeed.
Sarah, let's talk about the timetable on the budget. Now, we'll get to Foxconn in a minute. Foxconn is going to be up in the Senate on Tuesday. Then the budget is up in the Assembly on Wednesday. Do I have this right?
Remember, it's budget one day and Foxconn the other in the Assembly.
Yes. And has the Senate indicated when they're going to react to Assembly passage of the budget?
They told members to keep all of next week open. I'm hoping not Friday, right. But otherwise,
I'm hoping not Friday.
Coming
too.
Back the 18th and 19th is another possibility. So as soon as it clears the Assembly, they'll get to it as quickly as they can because Governor Walkerman wants to sign it by end of summer,
22nd.
Which is 22nd of September. So he'll have a few days to review it for any vetoes, sign it, and they'll. You know, the thing is with this delay, as embarrassing as it was for Republicans to have it go more than 2 months past being due, after they have the grip and grin. You know, news conference, the lawmakers behind him, and he signs it. 2 months from now, people probably won't remember if it was due. I mean, there was the most disruption to schools and local governments. I mean, for us, the Capitol, it was high drama. For everybody else, our lives went on. It is, though, not exactly a selling point. This budget took you 2.5 more months to do it than you should have.
Right. Okay, let's talk about the specific tax cuts. The governor opened the bidding on February 8th with $204 million in income tax cuts. Now, the Republicans, then led by the CPA, Senator Mark Lyon, Representative Coinga, they said, no, let's use most of that money, about $150 million, for cutting the personal property tax. Now, that doesn't get rid of it, but it goes a long way towards it, correct?
Actually, in this budget, it's only $74 million. It only takes 1 year of this budget. So $74 million went there. The AMT is about $7 million, I think, roughly, somewhere in that neighborhood.
The AMT most benefits the highest income filers.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay.
Generally, I mean, there are some lower income filers, but I think of those who pay the AMT in 2017 or 16, Dems gave us a memo, like more than half made $300,000 or more.
Mm-hmm.
There also were, you know, they did some money moves, like Governor Washington put $20 million into the budget stabilization, the rainy day fund, we call it. They kept that as cash. Also to help with that down payment toward the property tax bill.
Yes.
They got $50 million out of the JFC appropriation, you know, that kind of loose cash they have to make everything work in the end. But the bottom line is they're going to sell that AMT. They're gonna, as good for small business people, middle class earners, in their words. They're going to sell the personal property tax repeal as something good for Main Street. And they're going to go out and really push the gas tax in and go up. Schools got a big push, so they're going to be generally positive about this budget,
but
paper over, though, the transportation problem that they have.
That's true, and we'll get to the transportation package in a minute, but it's also kind of good for we homeowners because the state's no longer going to levy for the forestry tax, and the governor said the December 2018 property tax bills will be slightly lower, not higher.
No, than a dollar or two. I'm sure Governor Walker will say something along the lines of, not only do we cut your taxes, we eliminated a tax. How often do you hear that from state government? Like, that's going to be one of his lines next year.
Were you surprised on February 8th, though, the governor recommended a $20 million upper in the earned income tax credit? That didn't make it.
No. Basically, for Republicans in the Finance Committee, they thought it was not the best bang for their buck in terms of how they want to do things.
Yeah.
But the Governor Walker, his proposal, in his words, about strengthening the family, he saw this as a way to help families in that bracket do more. But they didn't think it was worth the money to do it.
Now, we don't have any stock picks this week. Any particular winners and losers on the tax deals you want to talk about?
Obviously, if you are somebody who was looking, if you're in the lower two income brackets, you didn't get your tax cut. But it was going to be minimal, so that's not great. If you're a business and pay the personal property tax, you get some relief. It's non-manufacturing equipment or something like that. So
tools.
Yeah,
I forgot the motion.
So you get a little bit of a
tools,
reprieve,
patterns, things like that.
But you don't get the full repeal, which is about $240 million a year. If you're paying the AMT, you feel good about yourself. If you're a homeowner, you're on your property tax bill. Now, let's be honest. This is a mythical home. It doesn't exist. It's the
median-valued mythical home. Doesn't exist.
So I can't say that my property tax bill will go down or stay flat the next 2 years.
Because both of our districts where we live have passed referendums.
But the overall average, you know, this if you take all the levy and all the credits, everything, and put it together in one big pot, then yes, that typical home will have a bill lower than it was before, and part of that is repeal the forestry tax.
Yeah. Okay, now let's turn to transportation, which hung them up for months.
This is probably the biggest failure of Republicans' budget, was finding a long-term solution. Now, you'll hear Republicans say we did the best that we could within the parameter that Governor Walker gave us, which was no gas tax increase,
no registration fee increase.
So apparently a hybrid fee, electric car fee, doesn't count as a registration fee increase, but that's besides the point.
No, the governor called that parity press fee. Conference on Wednesday.
But within that parameter, you know, they've had to find a compromise, and they did. But the problem is it pushes the long-term debt. We're now above, we're going to be above 20 cents of every dollar.
I think we're going to close on 22 by the end of this biennium.
Of every dollar going toward paying off debt, not other things. We don't have the north leg of the zoo being done. 94 East-West are not going to get done.
Right.
3990 stays on track.
So does 23. You saw the release from the Fox Valley legislators.
94 North-South, because the Foxconn bill gets back on track. So you have these issues that they've told us for 3-4 budgets. We will find a long-term solution. We have not had that solution put into us yet. Now, maybe they find a miracle the next 2 years. Maybe tolling becomes part of the ultimate package, but we've not seen this long-term solution.
Tolling that we're going to spend $2.5 million to study. Haven't we been studying
yes.
that?
We've studied
it. Okay, package borrows $402 million through the next 2 years. It cuts 200 state highway design engineer jobs, 100 this year, 200 next year.
By the way, DOT got a bunch of new jobs 2 years ago.
I think they got 180. So erase those. And as you said, $175 registration fee for electric cars, $150 on hybrids, which includes a $75.
Yeah.
But there are some winners here. You said I-39 stays on track,
yeah.
Highway 23 stays on track, the Verona Road stays on track, and the interstate, I think, in Sheila Harsdorf's district stays on
94
track.
94 gets enumerated to be expanded there up in St. Croix County because there is a lot of traffic going between
the fastest growing areas.
Yeah.
Okay, now let's spend a little time on the Foxconn deal, which the Senate will vote on Tuesday. Do I have that right?
Yes.
Okay. The biggest addition, which surprised me, my eyebrows went up, is to clear the way for an immediate Supreme Court disposition of any challenges to this. And there will be challenges. Here's my question. Was this added to get this resolved before the November 8, 2018 election, or is that my innate
Good
suspicion?
Question. Nobody in finance really defended that provision during the debate. Mark Bourne was the one who said, well, look, you guys are talking about this homeowner who has his property seized, you know, eminent domain or whatnot. He said that's actually a good thing for people because he has a quicker resolution
yes.
of whether it's taken. So that was his argument. Now, there are some questions about legality of this because, remember, you're talking about the legislative branch telling the judicial branch, this is how your appeal process is going to work.
Thou shalt take this
yes.
immediately. Which I don't think the Supreme Court has to do.
Judges sometimes balk at being told how the appeal process should
yes.
work. We shall see how this all works out. But the idea behind it seems to be that we have come to a point in Wisconsin where almost everything Republicans do gets challenged, often in Dane County Court,
yeah.
and there is a road bump at least, speed bump, saying, no, you can't do that. It goes to the appeals process, and the Supreme Court says, actually, yes, you can.
Right.
So it looks like they're trying to speed up these appeals because there will be lawsuits filed over the environmental regulations in this bill or the project at Foxconn. I mean, you can go on the list and you can see where they could happen. They're trying to speed the process to get shovels in the ground, this project up and going as quickly as possible.
Yeah, and they also boosted from 10 to 15 million the host communities. And mm-hmm. we still don't know where this Foxconn mega huge complex is going to be. But my nominee for quote of the week is what John Nygren said in the pre-meeting briefing.
Yes.
Foxconn, quote, the most exciting thing for Wisconsin since the cow. How
yes.
can we not do a show without that? You were in the room. What? Did everybody laugh?
Everybody got, it definitely got tweeted, I put it that way.
Okay, let's do it that way. Okay. Late yesterday afternoon or early evening, Assembly Democratic Leader Peter Barca issued a statement. Part of it reads, it has been my honor to work as their leader in the fight for family-supporting jobs and an economy that works for everyone. Assembly Democrats have always fought to do what is right for Wisconsin families and workers. He announced that he'll be stepping down at the end of this month. You surprised?
The timing was a little bit interesting because there have been rumblings about Peter Barca as leader of that caucus for a couple cycles because, look, he took over in 2011 elected after the 2010 elections, after Democrats were wiped out a little bit in the first GOP wave we saw in 2010. since then, he led them through the Act 10 fight, that 40-some hours of debate, whatever it was.
60.
Assembly floor, yes, thank you. But they didn't make any progress in getting out of the minority. They actually have lost seats now compared to where they were in 2011. So in 14, he was challenged by Evan Goyke and survived. In 16, people talked about challenging, but nobody actually stepped forward to go after him because there was a perception that, well, Peter's the only one who's built up the chips that you build up in politics with people where he did doors for them, he raised money for them, he was there for them personally. He's the one who did that kind of work. This Foxconn bill was the last straw.
He was one of three Democrats who voted for it, but it's important to say that the three Dems are from the
yes.
region where Foxconn hopefully is going to be built. The governor says it's going to be built there.
And someone trying to make the connection, some connection of Peter voted for the bill, ergo he was dumped. That's not really the whole story. If you look at how that transpired, Peter Barker worked with Republicans on the bill while it was in the amendment process, like going through committee. He then on the floor of the assembly praised pieces of it. Now remember, most of his caucus was like railing against this thing during debate, and he chose to say good things about it. He voted for it, and then after the floor period was over, they had this kind of impromptu news conference about it, and instead of being about the Assembly Democratic message about the bill, it became the why Peter Barker voted for Foxconn. For Assembly Democrats, that is somebody who's undercutting the caucus message. Because remember, when we first started talking about this bill a month or so ago, when it was a month and a half ago, the question was, how do Democrats message this bill that they're not seeing as anti-job and bringing these other things? Well, since that happened, we've seen all these studies about, well, it could be 25 years until they break even. We're talking about a subsidy up to $312 million annually. They saw those as the ticket to make the argument against the bill, and Peter kind of undercut that message with what he did. Now, look at finance this week. They went through and amended the Foxconn bill, and as Assembly Democrats would raise points about it, the throwback was from Republicans, well, your leader voted for this. Why do you have an issue with something your leader supported? And that phrase is used several times. That, from what I can pick up, was it. And now, Assembly Democrats have some issues. They have a lot of people in safe districts who don't raise money for the cause. What I mean by that is they may raise money for themselves, but they're not writing big checks to candidates for contested seats. Mm-hmm. They're sitting on money that are decent chunks of change that they don't need to win re-election because they are in 70%, 80% Democratic districts. There's a problem there with message they have to deal with. Some people say, well, Barker did the best that he could with what he had, and oh, by the way, they raised more money in 16 than they had before in 14 and 12. They ran better candidates. They had a better plan than they had the last two cycles, but the Trump wave was too much.
And also, Democrats blame gerrymandering, which will be argued before the U.S. Supreme Court on
another
October
issue.
3rd. I want to stay on this a bit because let's look at Peter Barker's service. He served in the Assembly from 85 through 92. Mm-hmm. Then he served one special election.
Yep, he resigned actually in 93. He won the special election in 93 for Les Aspin's seat and resigned.
Yes, right. Then he comes back.
Small business administration for a while after losing his congressional seat in 94 wave.
So he's had 15 years mm-hmm. in the Assembly. But I want to, Representative Christine Sinicki, a veteran and Democrat from Milwaukee, told you guys this. She blamed young legislators who have never legislated for the ouster of Peter Barker. Mm-hmm. Now, I found that intriguing, and here's what I did. I looked up the age of Assembly Democrats. You remember there's 35 yep. of them? 10 Assembly Democrats are under the age of 40. None of them were here when the Democrats last were in charge of the legislature, 9-10 session.
Hintz was here, I think, right? Yeah.
So no, he wasn't under 40. I'm getting that.
Oh, sorry.
14 Assembly Democrats are under 45.
Mm.
Of those 14, three of them, including Mr. Hintz, were there the last time Democrats. So Sinicki's comments open up this generational debate, which I just find so intriguing. Is it that simple that the younger Democrats, remember, it takes 18 votes to elect a new Democratic leader or get rid of the current one. Is it that simple, a generational faction?
And so maybe not. It's an issue of this isn't working. What's going to be different next time? And the challenge to the next leader, who that person's going to be, is these Democrats who sometimes aren't disciplined on message, who sometimes don't raise the money for the cause. Can that next leader get buy-in from those members and get them to push toward a common goal? That's going to be a challenge for whoever takes over.
Yeah, it really is. And just to point out, former State Senator Bob Jauch, who served there 26, 28 years, said this in a Facebook post, two sentences about Representative Barker. In this dog-eat-dog political climate, Peter has provided a voice of reason. Sentence one, hopefully those clamoring for his hide, Mr. Barkas' hide, on Foxconn will remember that he voted his loyalty to those in his district who he represented, and I would have done the same thing. What Senator, former Senator Jauch is saying, had Foxconn been targeted for Northwest Wisconsin, Bob Jauch would have voted for it. So there, Mr. Barca does have some of his defenders.
Oh, and for all these issues I'm bringing up that I've heard from people this week, Peter is generally a nice guy and connects himself with class in the assembly, generally speaking. And so people will tell you they like him as a person. It's a question of what changes and how do we get, how do Democrats, how do they do a better job in 2018 than in the last couple of cycles?
Okay, just quickly to wind up on the Mr. Barca issue, do you expect, you reported that Mr. Hintz considered running and then passed because he just had a baby?
Baby was born in the spring, I believe.
Yes. And then Mr. Goyke challenged him in 12. Do we know who might be running for this office
All
now?
The speculation is focusing on Hintz right now as we sit here. The question is anybody else? I mean, they have now 3.5 weeks if they want to try and mount a bid. Will anybody else try and step forward? But all signs really are pointing to Gordon Hintz as being definitely in the mix as a potential leader for that caucus.
Okay. We have State Senator Leah Vukmir entered the race against Tammy Baldwin.
Mm-hmm.
She faces a Republican primary, Nicholson and
maybe Hovde.
Maybe Hovde. State Senator since 2010, Assembly Member before that, Board of the Directors of ALEC, pediatric nurse practitioner as her career. Serious candidate?
Oh, absolutely. It's interesting, the dynamic between Leah Vukmir and Kevin Nicholson so far shaping up that Leah's playing up the message of, I have a record, I have a proven conservative record, and Kevin Nicholson's message is, I am the conservative outsider who can clean up Washington, D.C. And it just basically reinforces their backgrounds. Leah Vukmir has been elected for 14 years.
Yep.
She was there for Act 10. Southeastern Wisconsin Talk Radio knows Leah Vukmir. They've had her on their shows. She's voted with Scott Walker. I mean, she's got a record you can point to as somebody who was part of the conservative wing of the caucus. Prevailing wage repeal. She's a player in those things like that.
And she just got to join finance before they adjourned to boost special ed vouchers for children with major disabilities.
One of the big questions is...
That's a big ticket item there.
Big question is the Trump voter. So the Trump voter last year, is that Trump voter going to turn out in a primary for Leah Vukmir before Kevin Nicholson or maybe Eric Hovde? You can see a map where Leah does really well in Southeast Wisconsin, which really is the vote-rich part of that primary. You know, if she has talk radio on her side, that would help. Of course, Charlie Sykes, when he was still on the air, he was seeing somebody could drive turnout in a GOP primary because he was so influential. Can the Jay Webbers, Dan O'Donnells, Vicky McKenna's, Mark Billings, can they do this a similar, have they a similar impact? But she thinks she'd do well there. But that voter in western Wisconsin, in northern Wisconsin, in Green Bay, which really went for red this past election, who do they turn out for? What's that voter going to do? And that Trump voter, will it be somebody who wants somebody like Leah, who's been around, or a total drain, you know, outsider, like not from Washington, not from government kind of person? I don't know.
Right.
It's interesting to watch how it plays out, though.
Yeah, it sure will. Oh, okay, final item. We didn't mention it when it was pointed out that the Attorney General's office spent $10,000 on the coins kicking ass every day, but public documents released to WisPolitics and Associated Press, other news media, have now reached a total of $83,000 in items. That's not a lot of money in the great million-dollar budget, super million-dollar budget of DOJ. But does Attorney General Schimmel has a swag problem when 10,000 on kicking ass everyday coins, 3,200 on candy and fortune cookies, 6,269 on messenger bags, 6,000 on pistol cases? How big a deal?
They make a good campaign ad, and that's the bottom line. You know, it's kind of interesting. Some of the candy was like blood clot candy and stuff like that. Really kind of interesting.
Yes.
You know, I mean, hey, we've all been to
candy
like...
Candy saliva, candy blood.
We've all been to conferences, you know, you walk through and get like a free lanyard here. So you understand why it was done. But when you create something that is fodder for the easy TV ad, it's a problem for you politically. That's the bottom line.
And in a future life, when I was a newspaper reporter, I did the story on former Governor McCallum printing the coins.
Oh, yeah.
And we still remember that, don't we?
I still have one.
I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for September 8th.
Rewind, Your Week in Review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, it's how we get there.